Welcome to Kylie Says It's About to Get Real. I chose the name of this podcast after most of my friends would say, shit Kylie says, after I'd share a deep thought or perspective on something that always ended in more conversations. I started this podcast out of a period of spiritual curiosity that caused me to do deep dives into manifestation, meditation, and mindset and perception work that had me exploring things like angel numbers, life path numbers, human design, mediumship, Akashic records researching, and more, all while overcoming a traumatic eating disorder and trying to thrive as a postpartum mom of two while building my corporate career. This show is a mix of guest interviews and my take on life, love, friendship, and all of the topics that I find interesting. Here, we talk to experts, authors, entrepreneurs, and more. If you're looking for a show to get you out of your rut, you found it. Welcome to Kylie Says. I'm your host, Kylie, and I promise to entertain you, give it to you straight, be real with you, and have some fun along the way. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the show. I hope that the title of this episode didn't scare many of you away, but I'm so happy that you're here because I feel like this is actually a really important topic and one that traditionally seems a little bit taboo to discuss. And that's why I wanted to talk about it here on the show, because recently I have been realizing that when I go to sleep at night, I have overwhelming thoughts of, similar to the Barbie movie, inescapable death. And I was talking to my psychiatrist about this because I brought it up to her to ask first, like, hey, am I crazy? Is this something that I need to be concerned about? And she asked me a few prompting questions about, like, my thoughts around, what am I actually feeling? Is it something that I'm actually scared of? Or am I trying to actually find meaning and purpose for my own life so that I can feel like I'm leaving something behind? And after a little bit of prompting and back and forth, I realized that, wait, that is exactly it. The entire reason why I feel like I focus so heavily on these thoughts about what happens afterwards is because I want and I'm so desperate to find the purpose that I'm meant to fulfill in this life. I don't want to leave this world with the regret of not feeling like I came to my true potential, or with the regret of not feeling like I did everything I could. I tried a little bit harder to make some of my dreams come true. I don't want to leave this earth feeling like I gave up on dreams, on visions, on realities that I could have helped myself realize because I was afraid to try. And that goes back to, I think, part of the beginning of the year just really being about, let's shed everything that we were trying to let go of in 2025, because we still have not officially entered the year of the fire horse. So we have a few more weeks, actually about a month, a little less than a month, until that moment in time happens, depending on when you're listening to this. I'm recording on January 23rd. So it just really got me thinking, like, why am I like that, first of all? Why is that something that I am consistently thinking of? And one of the things that I found in doing some research is that this idea about mortality salience, being aware of what might happen after death, was largely coming because I had an experience in my life that took me closer to someone in my family, rather getting to what I thought might sadly be death. And that didn't end up being the case. But mortality salience refers to moments when death becomes more prominent, like the mortality of someone that you love. There's this potential, oh my gosh, could they still be here after this moment in time? And based on these studies, it shows that these reminders actually increase people's motivation in wanting to seek meaning in their own lives. That can be through social connection, through finding ways to connect with other people. But it's all about trying to give your life meaning compared with controls. In my personal experience, I also feel like there's this sense of control that I dislike because no one actually knows for sure what happens. And I like to be absolutely sure of certain things when I'm making decisions. That's why I do things like going to spirit baby mediums and such. And you could say, on the contrary, you don't know if anything that they're saying is actually real. That is 100% true, but it all comes back to this idea of faith, to this idea of hope, to this idea of belief. And there's this other theory called terror management theory, and it's one of the main research frameworks that connect thoughts of death to meaning and purpose in your life. And so this theory explains how awareness of immortality influences thinking and behavior. So humans will cope with the anxiety of the inevitable by clinging to things like religion, beliefs, cultural worldviews, and goals that really give their life meaning and value. So terror management theory, or TMT, I also feel like they should change the name. Terror management theory sounds a lot scarier than what I feel like this is, which is searching for the purpose of your life so that you leave this world and this life better than you came into it. That is where I am trying to find purpose in my life right now, because I have never been more jealous than the people who come into this world knowing what they're meant to do, knowing who they're meant to be, and knowing what their immediate passions are and how they can actually follow them to make a living, to make money, and to feel fulfilled in life. And I think that's why so many people have clung to religion and have clung to cult-like behaviors for so long, is because that gives them a sense of purpose. It gives them a sense of ability to feel like there is something after this I can look forward to. There is something after this that I know without a shadow of a doubt will happen based on the teachings I've been told, based on the symbolic meaning of and continuity of the religion. And so it just really got me thinking about, like, why, instead of just focusing on the other mindset, okay, I want to find purpose, do my thoughts immediately go to death? And it just made me feel a little bit scared in a way, because I was a little bit concerned, like, what does this actually mean for me? Because I'm not in any way hoping to reach that moment in time. If anything, I'm actually hoping to do the exact opposite, and I'm having anxiety about the idea of death. And other studies show that higher meaning in life, especially a clear sense of purpose, is associated with lower death anxiety. So people with a stronger self of meaning tend to report less fear or distress from thoughts of mortality, self-esteem. And that partly mediates the relationship between meaning and death anxiety. And that got me incredibly interested in this, in thinking through, when you find meaning in your life, you have less anxiety in general because you know deep in your soul that you're on the right path. You make decisions related to the narrative that you have told yourself that you are on the right path and that you are fulfilling your purpose. You know that you are fulfilling your purpose because everything that you do towards that purpose feels in alignment with your life. You are making decisions from a place of trust within yourself, and that's something that we've talked about in plenty of other episodes. It comes back to trusting yourself, and that's one thing that I've been really working on over the last few months, is trying to input moments in my day and throughout my week and then throughout the months where I'm giving myself small moments of trust that I'm consistently building up and proving to myself, hey, I can actually do small things and show myself that I can trust myself without any fear that I won't pull through. And for instance, I said I was going to pay X amount on my credit card. I didn't do that this month, but I did make like a decent dent, and it was very much near the goal that I had set for myself. But I had other things unexpected, like some State Farm payments that I actually forgot about that I needed to take care of. So in that instance, I had to kind of divert some of those funds that I had initially set a goal around towards that versus the goal I set for myself. And what did I feel immediately? Anxiety, fear, sadness that I didn't reach my goal. And then I had to think to myself, this is just a random situation and scenario at the end and the beginning of the year when we first moved into our home, because that's when we moved into our home initially multiple years ago. That's when I had to take care of all of those things. So I actually need to set more reminders in my calendar towards the end of the year to make myself more aware so that I have less fear and anxiety when I enter that period of time and I know I have more bills that I'll have to take care of than less. It doesn't scare me that I have to take care of the bills. What scares me is not being aware of them coming and ineffectively using and spending my money in ways that makes me have anxiety about paying bills, because I'm for sure an overspender. That's just who I've always been. I'm just a fancy bitch who likes to spend on bougie things and experiences. And that's something I'm working on. But, you know, it makes me happy and it gives me purpose. So talking about purpose, I got to just stick to some of the things that truly, truly work for me. And speaking of, some longitudinal research. So this means older adult studies where they follow their lives for a long, long period of time. Connect meaning in life, including purpose, with better health and a lower mortality risk, even though those effects may be mediated through some sort of things like health and function. And some of this comes down to knowing who you are and what you need in life. What gives you motivation and what gives you meaning? I've been thinking a lot about motivation because In order to want to fulfill any sort of goal, you have to have a motivation behind it. Whether it's you want to get to 1 million followers, like an influencer I just talked to over dinner last week, across your social platforms. Maybe it's because you want to build a shelf booty, which is my 2025 goal that didn't happen because I sit on my ass all day at the computer at work. But the trigger of motivation is really just a search for meaning and purpose in some sort of way, shape, or form. So if you think about it, without motivation, you have absolutely no desire to do anything unless you lose hope and suddenly find it again. Because some of the things that I found in some of the books that I've been reading and just some of the research that I was doing on this topic and chatting with my psychiatrist, motivation and hope to me go hand in hand. Because without hope, you have no motivation to do anything. Because when people lose hope, people lose their will to live, literally. Because hope, faith, and motivation are the drivers to forward momentum. If you think about emotion, it's motion, it's energy in motion. That is what emotion means. If you are putting zero energy towards anything and your emotions are just in the toilet, you feel like there is nothing left, you've got nothing to give, you have zero motivation and there's no meaning associated to anything other than the lack thereof. So that means that the lack of meaning in your life is a lack of hope and a lack of motivation to do anything, to get your ass off the sofa, to go to the doctor and get that lump checked out, to go back to school and get that degree that you promised yourself that you would do, to go to the bookstore and actually pick up a book that you said that you were going to read. Those are the things that are in alignment with each other in order for you to have meaning and purpose and hope in your life. And for some of us, that might come from a cultural or a personal framework that we have or that we are letting go of. Let's say you grew up in a family. I was watching Queer Eye last night, and it was about these two sisters, and both of the sisters, they had, I think together their family had 18 siblings. That meant that the parents had to be out of the house and working all of the time. And the children that were older were basically in charge of the younger kids. That age of children and so many of them, it is outlandish to think that you could have one or two children in charge of that many other children. And they were discussing the fact of their upbringing being so different, and that one of the daughters, who was much older than the other, had an incredibly different experience growing up than the younger one did, who saw her childhood as nurturing, approachable, safe, where the older child felt very unsafe. She felt very unloved, because there was no one there to tell her she was loved or to give her that support that she needed. There was just this expectation that as a child, she would take on a parental responsibility for the rest of her siblings without having any choice in the matter. That stalled her own growth. It created a personal framework that she can be used, that her life does not have value, that any of her own beliefs about herself are dependent on that are shaped by her parents. But then you have the younger sibling whose lifestyle was so incredibly different as a result of her upbringing, because she saw the same things patterned to her in a completely different format. She saw siblings taking care of each other, family before everything else, the struggle creating a closeness, creating that personal framework of safety, of community, of participation for the greater good. That gives you two different completely life experiences that shape the narrative about your life and the narrative you then tell yourself about worth, hope, faith, meaning. And those long-term outcomes clearly have significant impacts, because the entire purpose of the show, the episode that I watched last night, was about helping these sisters see that despite the fact that they have two completely different lived experiences from growing up in the exact same household with the exact same siblings and the exact same parents, does not mean that they can't find common ground in their ongoing love for each other. Because just like the longitudinal research says, the connections are created by meaning in life and purpose with a lower mortality risk and health and function. The mediation between health and function is often the mediation between hope and motivation. And so it really got me thinking about, what does that mean for myself? What does that mean for all of us as we actually are living in this insanely crazy world, where we're seeing things like a five-year-old get detained by ICE and shipped across the country so that his parents can be pulled out, that are both here legally without any criminal record, and they are being racially profiled as a result. Like, that is so incredibly scary to me. And we have to think of the psychological systems and effects that are going to be created for those people. That little poor baby is not going to feel safe. He's not going to feel the narrative that he now has is that people in control are there to harm me, are there to harm my family, are there to hurt us, cannot be trusted. And those are the sorts of narratives that completely shape our life purpose, that completely shape the way that we feel and are motivated about seeking help, about finding our meaning and our purpose in our life. So I then was doing some research on the psychological aspects about thought processes around death, similar to what happened in the Barbie movie, which I keep coming back to as almost a comedy. Like, it is comedic to me that I am having thoughts of inescapable death and trying to find the meaning in my life, because that was exactly what happened in the Barbie movie. And my daughter used to love the Barbie movie. We would watch it countless times a week. And I think it's an important narrative for anyone, but thinking about death doesn't always just make people scared, but it does significantly activate these deep psychological systems that push us towards what we are finding meaningful, whether it be beliefs, relationships, goals, helping others, building lasting contributions in the world. And when people have already found purpose and meaning, those reminders of death throughout their life tend to reinforce that purpose rather than erode it. But conversely, without a strong sense of purpose, mortality thoughts can increase because there's this fear that's linked to higher death anxiety, lower psychological health, when you have a lower perspective of what your meaning in life is. And when you have, and this mortality salience that I talked about earlier, that's when you become more aware of the fact that death is inevitable, and it increases your search for meaning and your pro-social intent, meaning positive social movement, interaction, engagement, community, etc., that you can ideally associate more meaning in your life, better social outcomes, more meaning in your life, linked to lower death anxiety and better psychological health, more purpose in life, a strengthened emotional resilience when thinking about death, a lack of meaning in life, higher distress under mortality salience. It's really crazy. And so I think that I came to this conclusion when I was discussing this with my psychiatrist that, hey, I'm actually looking for growth. I'm not looking to confront death. I'm looking to find more meaning and purpose in my life by pushing myself and feeling proud of myself. And at the end of the day, we find purpose when we feel proud, when we feel like we can trust ourselves. And so that's why I think it's incredibly important to build these small tips or to build these small goals every single week. Let's say it's walking 10,000 steps a day, 5,000 steps a day. Let's say it's taking an hour break in between your workday when you work from home so that your eyes are not on the computer. Let's say it's calling a friend twice a week because you promise that you're going to call people more instead of just texting nonchalantly when you're in between meetings and there's no purpose associated with this. Let's say that it's actually going to the store and doing your grocery shopping with no kids, headphones in, etc. You need to give yourself small wins, but then hold yourself accountable to them. I have had so many times where I have not held myself fully accountable, and I've done a few things towards one goal, a few things towards another goal, and I have so many goals and I do tiny micro movements towards each goal, but I never actually end up reaching the goal because I'm doing those micro moments in time instead of focusing. So for instance, 1 week, focus on one small subset of goals that you know that you have a likelihood of being able to accomplish, and then dedicate your week towards accomplishing whatever that goal is. Just make it one. For instance, I used to have goals, and I still do this, of working out 4 times a week, 3 times a week. If I even get to 2 times a week and I didn't get to the 4, I still feel proud that I was working towards my goal. Some things, of course, will come up in life, like, oh, you have to travel for work, your partner's out of town, so you can't have as much freedom during the day as you normally would over the weekends with your kids and going to the gym. Getting out of the house for 1 to 2 days and doing a walk for 30 minutes in between calls. Like, there are small things that you can absolutely do to increase the likelihood that you'll build that trust in yourself, that you'll build more meaning, you will reframe your perspective on how you view yourself, how you talk to yourself, and then your narrative will start to shift. Your narrative will start to shift from, I cannot trust myself, I do not believe I can accomplish a goal, there is no point in me even trying because I know that it's not going to happen to me, to, I trust that the goals that I set for myself, I am capable of reaching. I trust that the things that I say I'm going to accomplish, I will accomplish because they have meaning to me. I trust that the behaviors that I am purposefully moving towards will help me reach those goals and helping me get one step closer to building more trust and respect for myself. I trust that the relationship and narrative I have for myself is one of positivity, is one of reinforcement, and is one of meaning and purpose versus lacking of all of those things. So when you start reframing the way that you do small movements in life, you build affirmations for yourself that show, hey, I can continue doing these things that sometimes feel hard for me because I promised myself I would. And I'm someone that keeps promises to myself because I care enough about my well-being and I want to be a good model for others, especially if you have children, to show them that when I say I'm going to do something, I will. And that also comes back to just parenting in general. I've become a lot more aware of the fact that when I say something to my kids, if I don't follow through with it, whether it be a threat to them, I'm going to separate you, I'm going to do this, they no longer will trust that what I say is actually true. Because if I say something to them and then I don't follow through and I don't do it, they're going to learn that mommy's going to say whatever she wants to say, but nothing's going to ever happen. And then they're going to be quite shocked when I actually do follow through. So it's important that when you say something to yourself or to other people, that it's something that you mean. It's something that you can actually follow through with. It's something that gives you an ability to prove my word means something, because when I say I'm going to do something, I will. So watch out, be positive, be negative. But that is something that is incredibly, incredibly important to keep in mind. And I urge you as parents, if you tell your children that you will scold them or do something as a result of their behavior, and then the behavior continues, it's important to be mindful of how you approach it. That's something I have a very difficult time with, but I am incredibly mindful. If I tell my child, for instance, my daughter, oh, I'm going to take you with me to the nail salon next time, and I don't, she will not forget that. She will think that there is some reason I did not want her to come with me. She will think that there is some reason I chose to go alone, that maybe I don't enjoy her company or something. And I do not want to set that narrative up in her tiny little brain at 6 years old. So be mindful, because the narratives that you are setting up for yourselves are also the narratives that you're setting up for your children. And those are the narratives that are going to frame how they view themselves and their relationships between what you say, who they can trust, and the meaning between those words and those actions. It's just like that saying, actions speak louder than words. I actually don't believe that's necessarily the case. I think that both go hand in hand. Of course, you can say whatever the F you want, but if you don't follow through with anything meaningful, no one will care what you say. So yes, your actions do mean something, but your words mean something too. And so I think it's important to think about what it means when you speak to yourself, even if it's just in your head. Because those words do have meaning, and ideally they are associated and paired with an action that makes you feel proud of yourself. If you don't leave the day and go to bed feeling like you have at least one to two things to think about what made me proud of myself this day, then you need to reframe what you're asking yourself when you go to bed. And mind you, I'm of course thinking about death before bed, so take this advice with a grain of salt. But I do think it is incredibly important and honestly imperative to have the insight into your own head to know, oh, that's a narrative I don't want to tell myself anymore. Oh, I would really prefer to be someone that I actually trust. If I trust myself, then I'm much more confident that others will trust me. And I will go into relationships feeling that trust is inevitable because I trust in myself. So regardless of the situation, I can navigate it because I trust in myself to make the right decisions for myself. And those decisions will be intrinsically linked to the purpose of my life. It's not just psychological, but that will be linked to the physical well-being and longevity that I have. And that is something that is deeply related to your motivation, your hope, your faith, and the meaning that you have for life. So if you in any way, shape, or form are similar to me, where you have these overwhelming thoughts of what happens afterwards, is this all that there is? Is there anything more that I can be doing? Then I hope that you enjoyed this episode and at least gave you something to think about. Please, I would love it if you enjoyed this to like, subscribe, rate, or leave a comment on the show. It would mean so much to me. Thank you so much for being here. And until next time, this is Kylie Says.